Nelson, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast. Welcome to Utopia.
Okay, everybody, let's get right to it. But hope you're having a nice Sunday, despite the final score of the Houston Texans game. If you're listening to this podcast, chances are you're a Texans fan, and today was a sad day. They lose 24-22 to the Green Bay Packers in a game where the Texans, if we're being honest, were probably lucky to be in a game as close as it was. They needed to win the turnover margin just to be in this game. Teams that win the turnover margin by three or more typically win games over 90% of the time. That shows you how bad the Texans were throwing the football today. Not throwing the football, but protecting C.J. Stroud and his ability to throw the football. So welcome in on a Sunday evening. I'm Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610. We'll get into four winners and four losers from today's loss by the Houston Texans. Still 5-2 on the season, still leading the AFC South. But don't look now. The Colts are 4-3 on the season, and coming to NRG Stadium next week sets up a very, very juicy matchup for the Houston Texans against the Indianapolis Colts, who they beat back in week one. So Texans need to hold serve next week. We'll worry about that game, though, as this week rolls on. For now, we'll break down today's loss to the Green Bay Packers, an imminently winnable game where I thought that D'Amico Ryans, the defensive coordinator, had a very, very good game. I thought the defense was the strength of this team today, which is noteworthy because they were missing so many guys. The one guy they were getting back was D'Amico Autry, who really didn't do anything today. So kudos to D'Amico Ryans and the defense for the game that they put together today. I thought that was a winning effort on the defensive side of the football. I thought D'Amico Ryans, the head coach, did some very head-scratching things today that we'll get into on the podcast here. So at the end of the day, this is, to me, this game and this loss, I put the brunt of this thing at the foot of Chris Strouser, the O-line coach, Bobby Slowick, the offensive coordinator, and most importantly, the offensive line themselves. These are adult men who need to look in the mirror and wonder why the hell it is they can't put together a complete game. If they're running the football well, then they can't really pass protect. I'm talking about against good teams. I'm not talking about against the New England Patriots last week, where even turnovers in that game gave you a lot of short fields in that game. I'm talking about the ability to man up in a game on the road and pass protect like a real fucking offensive line. I am so angry at this offensive line right now and just how laissez-faire they are. They don't look motivated at all to fix whatever it is they're doing. Every other room in that building has dogs in it, at least a dog that will lead the other puppies around and get in their faces. I feel like the wide receiver room, the dog level in that room, zero issue. Running back room, zero issue with the dog level, the canine level of that room. The quarterback himself, dog. The defense, dogs in every room over there. I'm not saying they're perfect, but they got guys to motivated to fix their mistakes. Ironically, the one guy who feels like he's the person that can identify dogs everywhere, Laremy Tunsil, is in the least canine room of this entire team. There are zero dogs in there. There's cats, there's squirrels. There might be a raccoon in there. There might be, I don't know, there's maybe a gerbil. There's definitely animals running around in that room. None of them are dogs. None of them right now are dogs. So that's a problem. And obviously it's going to be a problem for me sleeping tonight after that performance. I just thought that was an embarrassing performance by the offensive line. 10 of 21 for 86 yards or 82 yards, whatever the fuck it was, for C.J. Stroud. And some of that's on CJ, but when CJ Stroud's thrown for less than 100 yards, a lot of other stuff went wrong that was not on CJ Stroud. This offensive line is, for a position group that has so much invested in it, it is a joke way too often. It is way too often that either they run the football at a less than remedial level, or they pass protect like they're a high school team. They pass protect like they're a bad FCS team in an SEC stadium today. That was embarrassing. It was pathetic. And it'll show up again in four winners and four losers. Trust me. But offensive line needs to take a good look at itself in the mirror. That was a joke. All right. So now that we've got that out of the way, now that we've got the pleasantries out of the way, let's get going on four winners, four losers. Hey, quick reminder. I'm sure the mailbag is going to be popping this week, man. HOUmailbag@gmail.com. That's the email address. If you're watching, you can see it at the bottom of the screen. If you're listening, HOUmailbag@gmail.com. I know there's plenty of you that already know that email address and have already sent me emails, I would imagine, about this game. I'll be looking at them a little bit earlier this week. Usually I dive into the mailbag sometime like Monday afternoon, let the emails kind of roll in. I may go check tonight just for entertainment purposes. You may not be listening to this till Monday. I typically record these on Sunday right after the game. So sometimes they get out late Sunday. Sometimes they're right there for your morning commute on a Monday. Either way, thank you to Anthony Irwin, my producer, for getting it out to you. All right, HOUmailbag@gmail.com. Let's get into four winners and four losers in this game. 24-22, the final score. The Packers beat the Texans. The first time the Texans have lost a one-score game since week 12 against Jacksonville, and they've played in a shit ton of them. That they'd won 7 one-score games in a row since that win over Jacksonville, or the loss to Jacksonville in week 12 last year. That was a game where Matt Amendola kicked the field goal that boinked off the crossbar and the Texans lost 24-21. Since then, they had won 7 straight one-score games. But not today. Almost, but not today. So let's get into the winners. Let's start with the good performances first. I'm going to start with Neville Hewitt, who is on my list of winners. He'll be number 4. This is despite a really important penalty on the first touchdown drive for the Green Bay Packers, where he felt the need to suplex Jaden Reed. I don't know why he did that. It was so clearly after the whistle. It was so clearly against the rules where you're not allowed to pick somebody up and throw them down. He did. I mean, now, the form on his suplex was exemplary. If he were fighting at SummerSlam or some other WWE pay-per-view, I mean, he took that poor dude to Suplex City, dropped him on his shoulder. It was fantastic. Except in football, it's a 15-yard penalty. But outside of that, Neville Hewitt had a really, really good day today. Led the team in tackles. And it wasn't one of these led the team in tackles because he's tackling all these guys way downfield. That was a led the team in tackles, and it felt like he led the team in tackles. Had a big TFL on a third down stop. Had the interception to get the Texans started off to their fast start. Had another tip ball that almost ended up in Eric Murray's hands. It would have closed out the game for the Texans and been a fourth turnover for the Green Bay Packers. I thought Neville Hewitt was a more than suitable replacement for the two linebackers that were out, Azeez Al-Shaair and Henry Toa-Toa. And who knows what these injuries are going to look like for those two. I do feel, and I thought Jake Hansen had a good game too. Jake Hansen was solid enough. The linebackers were not what lost this team the game. Make no mistake about that. They did not lose the team this game. It was the offensive line that lost the team this game. So Neville Hewitt, you get a thumbs up from me. Just stop suplexing, guys. That's all I ask. No more WWE moves. I know you got away with doing that RKO to the guy on Buffalo on that kickoff return, and that was really cool, especially because they didn't flag you for it. But this was so obviously a penalty today. But Neville Hewitt, good job. If we're missing either of those linebackers next week, Toa-Toa or Azeez Al-Shaair, I am confident in Neville Hewitt's ability against the Indianapolis Colts to fill in suitably. Winner number 3, he didn't even play today, but Nico Collins is a winner today. It's not supposed to look the way it's looked the last 2 weeks. I mean, it's not like they were tearing New England up through the air. CJ Stroud was held to less than 200 yards against the Patriots, in no small part because the Texans actually ran the ball decently in that game. But there were times that he struggled in that game. He struggled all day long. And I know I'm going to put the offensive line on blast again in just a minute. But there is clearly an element to this offense that is missing when Nico Collins is not out there. You know, Diggs, I think, as an older receiver, was going to settle into the role of being more of a possession guy, an underneath guy. Whereas Nico's the guy that can just attack you anywhere on the field. I don't know what's going on with Tank right now. We'll talk about Tank in just a minute, but he was a big goose egg today and dropped a touchdown pass. Nico Collins, the absence is making the heart grow fonder for me, Nico. You are needed in this offense. CJ, when he throws the ball in your direction, great things happen. I can't say that about everybody else right now. So Nico, we miss you. Get well. This is going to be the longest 2 games ever. And I hate the fact that Nico Collins is not going to be on the field in a game against the Indianapolis Colts, because he is their T.Y. Hilton. He is to the Colts what T.Y. Hilton was to us as Texan fans. And it sucks that he's not going to play in the game next weekend. But onward we go. He is winner number 3. Winner number 2 today, Kalen Bullock. We had him on the postgame show. He was our guest. Another big play from Kalen Bullock. Another interception that was an athletic interception. This was a go get it interception. Kalen Bullock's interceptions, his two interceptions so far this year. He had the one in week one against Indianapolis where the receiver fell down. Now, he made a great catch on that play, so credit him for that. But that was not, that was more of a receiver fell down and he was right place, right time. Similarly with Drake May, Drake May just sailed one last week that Kalen Bullock came away with. Again, credit him for being right place, right time. Sorry, I got to wet the whistle a little bit. This was Kalen Bullock doing what he was drafted to do, which is play center field, spot, read the eyes of the quarterback, see what he's doing, and you go up and you get that ball over a receiver. That was an incredibly athletic play from Kalen Bullock. I am comfortable with the snaps that are getting doled out in the secondary in Jimmy Ward's absence right now to Kalen Bullock. Eric Murray, another story. Rough day today for Eric Murray. He had the pass interference penalty that flipped the field, missed a tackle out in the flat. I think that was in the same possession. And ultimately, the Packers were able to score a touchdown on that drive. But Kalen Bullock's been, for a third-round rookie, he's been fantastic. Three picks so far in seven games. That is what we were advertised with Kalen Bullock. Kamari Lassiter, get well soon. Number one winner today, Joe Mixon. I know the Texans ran the ball for 100-and-something yards today. The offensive line was so bad protecting C.J. Stroud that I refused to give them the appropriate amount of offensive line credit on Joe Mixon's day. And I would say if you go back and watch, it's not being blocked cleanly all the time, but Joe Mixon just brings so much extra juice and so many yards after contact and such an extra spring in his step that he makes this offensive line actually look competent run blocking at times, which is one of the highest compliments that I can pay to a human being. Making the Texans offensive line look competent. That's very, very hard to do. Very hard to do. So kudos to Joe Mixon. Three straight games now. Or I should say three full games now. The Colts in week one, the Patriots last week, and now the Packers this week, and he's been over 100 yards in all three of those. C.J. Stroud is the most important player on this team. He's the quarterback. Joe Mixon, when he's been out there for those three games, he has been their most valuable player in the three games they've been in. I think without Joe Mixon, they probably lose in week one. I think Joe Mixon, it's a different game last week, maybe against the Patriots. I don't think the outcome is different, but it's a closer game. And today, without Joe Mixon and the three turnovers, this is the Minnesota game all over again, but worse. So Joe Mixon, kudos to you. What a pickup. Really big fan of what Joe Mixon has done so far. We're going to need you again against the Colts next week, Joe, to run the football. All right. Let's get to the four losers. Those are the four winners. The four losers, I hate it because it's so much easier to find. This is the first week in a while, probably since the Minnesota game, where it's like been kind of hard to find losers with the Texans that you can at least talk about for a couple of minutes. I had to leave some on the cutting room floor. I'm going to start with D'Amico Ryans, head coach. Not D'Amico Ryans, defensive coordinator. D'Amico Ryans, head coach. I thought there was some questionable decision-making in this game. Well, first, let's start on the offensive side of the football. You know, people are going to blame Chris Strauser, people like me, in just a minute. They're going to blame Bobby Slowick. Ultimately, still, performances like today on the offense do fall at the foot of the head coach, you know, who's... It's still his show. You know, he's the one who hired all these guys. Everybody mad at Bobby Slowick. You got to be equally, not equally, but there's got to be a portion, a slice of pie where you're angry with D'Amico because he is the one who hired all these guys. But more specifically with D'Amico, I disagreed with some of his decision-making today. Not throwing the challenge flag on that would-be lateral. I don't know if that's on their operation behind the scenes. Clearly, that was a play that was worth throwing a challenge flag on. I'm not somebody who feels like you've got to be undefeated in winning challenges. I think there is something to throwing a challenge flag when you've got, I would say, even maybe only a 30 or 40% of winning it that you feel like you do. And I think that one was a 50-50. You know, I think depending on what angle you looked at, I think that, and you guys all know the play I'm talking about, the little flip pass that Jordan Love had that got called incomplete, but might have been a backwards lateral. I think maybe as a coin flip they would win that one. But, man, the upside of winning that challenge was getting the football back while the Packers were on a drive. So I think just on principle alone, on the expected value, you know, or the probability, the value of winning that challenge times what the probability is, that's a no-brainer for me. Also, clearly, they were in a defense that D'Amico was nervous about because he was jumping around like a maniac on the sidelines. You know, an easy way to kind of kill two birds with one stone? Throw a challenge flag. You can let the referees watch that play while your defense gets to get recollected or get collect themselves and get organized. So I thought D'Amico, I thought that was not a great sequence for him, especially considering the Packers scored a touchdown on that very play. So that was bad. And then the decision-making at the end of the game, the going conservative, he clearly got into a mode once they got into field goal range where he prioritized the Packers emptying their timeouts, it would appear, because he ran two non-plays up the middle that got stuffed for lost yardage on first down. Second and 12, Packers burn their first timeout. Then they run again. It's third and 15. They burn their second timeout. So clearly your strategy is let's have them get rid of their timeouts and we're going to kick a field goal here. Okay. I disagree with the strategy only because there were 2 minutes left in the game. And even if the Packers use their third timeout, there's still a minute 40 something left in the game. And the Packers, that's more than enough time with no timeouts to go get a field goal. Especially if your strategy on special teams is going to be to boot the ball out of the end zone for a touchback where no time goes off the clock and they get it at the 30. So that sequence made very little sense to me. D'Amico playing conservatively and prioritizing the emptying of the timeouts, I thought he did a masterful job in the Jacksonville game of having the Jaguars get rid of their timeouts in that last minute, but he did it with a minute to go in the game, and he did it on plays where the Texans were ahead of the chains. You're behind the chains now. It made more sense to attack the end zone. So then on third down, they throw an out pass for like 8 yards to Tank Dell. So you got four, best case, you've got fourth and seven and Tank slides out of bounds. Now it turns out Tank didn't even catch the damn football. So it was incomplete. But even if he had caught the football, he would have been out of bounds and they don't need to burn that last time out. So what are we doing? What are we doing at the end of this game? If you're going to go commit to emptying their timeouts and kicking a field goal, then run three plays that empty their timeouts and kick your damn field goal. C.J. Stroud would have been better off taking a sack on that play than throwing it to Tank. So maybe some of that's on C.J. too. He's got to know the situation. But D'Amico and Bobby Slowick are the ones calling passes on third down. Man, if you're going to drop back and throw a pass, throw it into the end zone and see if you get a touchdown or a P.I. You get a P.I. there, you win the game because it's first down. So I thought that end of game sequence was just horrible from D'Amico Ryans. So D'Amico has these end of half and end of game sequences where sometimes he just plays chess perfectly. And then he has days like today where I don't know what you're doing. Like, what are we trying? Are we attacking the end zone? You didn't need more yardage there on third down on that throw to Tank. You know, a lot of times if you're throwing an out pass to somebody on third and 15 in a field goal situation, you're just trying to pick up a few yards. You were at like the 20-yard line. You were well in Kyme Fairbairn's range. So I thought D'Amico Ryans, I thought he butchered that at the end of the game. I thought he butchered that. Who cares about the Packers not having their timeouts when there's still going to be a minute 30 or a minute 40 left in the game, and your plan is clearly to just give them the ball at the 30-yard line on the kickoff? They can't move it 35 or 40 yards in a minute and a half with no timeouts? Of course they can. You left them a timeout. I mean, there, you could have argued that D'Amico should have been using his timeouts at the end of the game. I haven't even touched on that yet. He had all three timeouts. They were in field goal range. How about using some? So I thought D'Amico was, I thought he was not good in the last 2 minutes, man. That was tough. He's a great coach. He really is. I'm so glad he's a coach of this team. But he did not put his team in the best position to win that game as the head coach today. As the defensive coordinator, thumbs up. As the guy calling the defensive plays, A+. As the guy making decisions on challenges and how to handle the end of the game, D-. All right. So that's loser number four. Loser number three, Tank Dell. I don't know where you are. Where are you, Tank? Where are you? And it would be easier if he hadn't dropped a touchdown for me to just leave him off of here. But Tank Dell being such a non-factor is one of the most disappointing things about this season to me. I can deal with Dalton Schultz being a non-factor. Tank Dell, I love Tank Dell. I like Dalton Schultz too, but I love Tank Dell. And God, he just showed so much promise last year. And it has not played out that way this year. I mean, is Tank Dell a guy that needs Nico Collins on the field that badly? I don't know. He's got Stephon Diggs out there. This is not a weaponless team. So there's that. That's number three. I don't want to spend too much time on Tank. It just depresses me. Number two, defensive penalties allowing the Packers to score touchdowns in the first half. The suplex penalty, which we touched on with Neville Hewitt, which nullified what would have been like a third and 10. They were behind, like the Packers were significantly behind the chains on that play. If he just holds on to Jaden Reed instead of suplexing him, then it's like third and 10 near midfield. Instead, now it's first and 10 and you're in field goal range and they go on to score a touchdown. So that penalty, and then the Eric Murray pass interference penalty, which, you know, Eric Murray in coverage is dicey. He's done some good things the last few weeks, but he did not have a good day today. And it would have been great if he could have come up with that interception at the end of the game. That would have been nice. If it was Kalen Bullock, that would have been an interception. Unfortunately, it was Eric Murray, who had one of the great interceptions that I've ever seen last week. But it was kind of in close quarters where a more physical safety like him can, you know, kind of corral the ball in open spaces. Maybe that's not his deal. So those defensive penalties, that's the only bad thing I can say about the defense today, is those two penalties were so crucial to the two of the three touchdowns that the Packers scored. Ultra crucial. Swinging field position, nullifying good down and distance situations. Just hated it. Number one, this guy does not get number one loser. This does not get, Chris Strauser has not gotten enough attention for how bad this offensive line has played at times. Certainly how far below the physical capabilities of this offensive line have played since he got here as a head coach. Man, normally, if this were Mike Devlin, people would be he'd have so many for sale signs in his front yard. People hated Mike Devlin at the end because that offensive line was so underperforming, underachieving. This offensive line is underachieving way more than those Devlin offensive lines were. And there's not a peep until today on the text page for the postgame show and on the postgame show itself on the phones about Chris Strauser. How is he not a position coach that is completely beleaguered and under fire right now? You've invested multiple first-round picks in Laremy Tunsil to get him here. You've invested tens of millions of dollars, and it's not just Bill O'Brien. Nick Caserio signed Tunsil to an extension. You've invested millions of dollars in cap space on Laremy Tunsil. You've invested a first-round pick on Titus Howard and extended him. You traded for Shaq Mason and then gave him a big extension. You put a second round, use a second round pick on Juice Scruggs. You use one of the Deshaun Watson trade picks on Kenyon Green. There is no position group on this team that has more invested in it right now in both draft capital and salary than the offensive line. And they stink. They stink. They look stupid out there at times. Like they don't know what the hell they're doing. I watch other teams with less physically talented offensive lines pass off stunts and twists and all these things, open up holes in the run game. This team, nothing. Nothing today. And they're going to get C.J. Stroud killed. I'm so mad at this offensive line. And by proxy, mad at the coach of this offensive line. And Slowick, you're in there as well. And I can't let D'Amico Ryans off the hook. Ultimately, the head coach is responsible for everything that happens on this team. And this offensive line is a joke. And it's got to stop. I just don't know that it does. I don't know who the dog is in that room. I think ultimately, sometimes when it's this bad, the players have to take ownership of this. And I don't know who the take ownership guy is in that offensive line room. I don't. It doesn't feel like it's Laremy Tunsil. Titus Howard doesn't feel like that guy. Shaq Mason is the guy that's actually got the pelts on the wall, but I don't know enough about his personality, nor how good he's played. That's the other thing. You actually need to be good at your job to take ownership of it. Laremy Tunsil at least is okay at his job. He just could be so much better. That's what's so infuriating about it. If you take the want to and the dog in guys like Stroud, Diggs, Will Anderson, Joe Mixon, I could name 10 other guys, and put that in Laremy Tunsil, I mean, you got a Hall of Famer. It's a Rudy situation. If I could take Rudiger's heart and put him in your body, Jamie O'Connell or whatever Vince Vaughn's character was on there, I forget the name of the guy in the movie Rudy. If you had half the heart of Rudiger's, you'd be an All-American. That's what I feel like saying to Laremy. If you're here right now, I'd be like, if you had half the heart of Diggs, you'd be an All-Pro. We know he wants to be all pro really badly. We know Laramie gets all upset when these power rankings of offensive lines or positions name him he's only the seventh best left tackle. He side-eyes the shit out of that. That and the salaries that get put out there for franchise left tackles. He loves tweeting about that. I would like it if Laramie would have some plays that of his own where he's pancaking guys in the run game that he could retweet. You know, go a little Stingley on everybody. Stingley or whoever runs Stingley's social loves to retweet big plays that Stingley makes. How about Laramie, you want to do that? Knock yourself out. I just don't need any more side eyes when Penei Sewell gets $28 million a year. I don't need that anymore. So it's the offensive line I'm putting in here, but man, Strouser has got to get some heat. This is a poorly, they're either the dumbest offensive linemen on earth or they are really poorly coached or both. Because they're making all the same mistakes, man. I hate to say it. All right. I went longer than I thought I would on this, but they've got me mad today, man. They've got me angry today. This is a winnable game. And you win this game and you're 6-1. And now you look at these last 10 games coming up at 6-1. You got four division games. You're going to be favored in all four of those. You got five out-of-division games, five of which are on national TV, either primetime or holiday. And three of those six teams that you play outside the division, kind of teetering on the brink. And we'll see what the Jets look like with Devontae Adams tonight. But the Jets are teetering right now. You weren't planning on that. Cowboys are teetering right now. I was not planning on them being this. I know they're 3-3, but they're a shaky 3-3. And then Miami, to me, you know, if they get Tua back, it obviously looks a little different than what they're trotting out there right now with Snoop Huntley. And I think Tim Boyle finished the game today. Tua is supposed to be back at practice this week. Still at home, a very winnable game. So it should be fun. 5-2. I'm not jumping off the ship or anything like that. I'm still enthusiastic about this team, but they've got to fix this offensive line. If this is what they are on the offensive line and you're putting the cape on CJ every week, he's not going to make it to week 18. It's not that he can't do it. It's that he physically won't be able to do it. That's the issue. All right. Again, HOUmailbag@gmail.com. There that is right there. Subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. If you haven't subscribed yet, I appreciate it. Appreciate everybody who's come up to me. I was at a charity event last night. For the first time at a charity event, people walked up to me and said Hutopia instead of saying Payne and Pendergast. I think it's still the radio show that's making the far bigger impact for Odyssey so far. But I was happy that people walked up and they liked the podcast and the YouTube. I appreciate that. So, and hope to see a bunch of you out at the game on Sunday against the Colts back home for the Texans. So subscribe, rate, and review. Tell a friend. I really appreciate that. Big thanks to Anthony Irwin for getting you this podcast. Thanks to all of you for listening. See you for a mailbag episode on Tuesday. I am out. Have a great night, everybody.